Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
And we're live. Well, welcome to the roundtable for December 18th. Last week it was the Black Pill Express. This week it'll be the Bitterness Express, or a variation thereof. Lots to talk about tonight. I know everybody's got a tight schedule, so we'll keep this on track. I'm going to start with you, Clay, since you've been on the roundtable for a while. If you guys haven't watched this, Tommy's podcast, he and EM did a conversation this week about the messaging that Trump is doing right now, and it couldn't be more spot on as far as I'm concerned. Watching the messaging coming out of the White House, watching the messaging, especially yesterday. So if you guys weren't paying attention to what happened yesterday, day before, Tucker Carlson came out. I can't remember whose show he was on, but he was on somebody's show talking about how he was told that Trump was going to do a stadium or an address to the nation and say that we were going to war in Venezuela. He went completely different direction, went with an end of the year message, which I thought was very interesting. So I'll start with all that. Clay, you can pick up wherever you want to pick up, man.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's this is actually a point that Ian was harping on harder than I was, but he has a good point. When the Trump administration, and we have to remember it's only been a year, which is not a long time to turn a ship the size of the U.S. government. But a lot of what we've seen, and especially what we're seeing now, or a ramp up of it, is actually loyalty testing. It's them at the high level still trying to figure out who are their guys, who's actually on their team, who's a subversive asshole that we should have fired a long time ago. And that does take a while. And there's all kinds of, and it actually gets boring as fuck, but it's, you get into this like whole cloak and dagger, like figure out who's who in the zoo. You have to do all that shit though, especially if you're going to make a big move in the near future. Now, I think we also can pretty much ascertain that, hey, sweets, that's very helpful, son. Thank you. That they have to do a lot of this shit before the midterms because there's a good possibility, that we'd lose the House and Senate then. So I think that's why we're seeing it ramp up. We're going to see it ramp up even more this year. What that means in the end, who knows, but it could be very exciting.
Yeah, I think so too. Chris, thoughts on that?
Not especially. Haven't really been keeping up with Trump's machinations. I do feel like they're kind of doing a bait and switch with the Venezuela thing. The right keeps pushing, all the influencers keep pushing this narrative that we're going to do a land invasion and it's all about the oil and et cetera, et cetera. Not that many are bringing up the Dominion voting machines, origin points being channeled through both Venezuela and Serbia. That's kind of been kept on a back burner for some reason, or written off as a Q thing, which I don't think it is. But so
my opinion, that's a good call out. My honest opinion is that's what Venezuela is all about. I think it's all about going after the source, Smartmatic, Dominion. And you know, Smartmatic and Dominion don't exist anymore, right? They were sold off literally the day the announcement was made. So they sold off to a separate company. But I think just if I go back to the 2021 audit in Arizona, I looked at all the PCAPs the Cyber Ninjas looked at. And I could tell you that you could see all the anonymous connections coming in from all over the planet to all those EAS servers. So I know they have all that data, all that traffic. And if they have all that traffic, they could take it all the way back to source and identify where it came from. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's what this, you know, ultimately leads to, is that to tie it back to whoever was in charge on this end of making sure the fraud took place. And my honest opinion is that's going to lead back to Obama. That's where all those roads end.
And wouldn't that be a hell of a thing to do right now? Because basically Trump said nothing about the 2020 election since he's been in office this time. If this was all just a grand, you know, look over here so they could do that, that would be incredible. And I mean, I believe there's something to that.
Well, I know there's a grand jury that's in session right now that's looking at Pelosi and looking at, I don't know if they're looking at Schumer, but I know they're looking at Pelosi. And they probably are looking at AOC and a few others that were in the room on January 6th that were orchestrating a lot of this. And there, if you go back to 2021, there's a video that came out in 2021 that Pelosi's daughter took where they're actually you can hear them arguing in the room when she walks in. And I think it was AOC that said, if people find out what we're doing, we'll be hung in the streets. I mean, similar to what George Bush said back George Bush Sr. said in the 90s, which, you know, if the public finds out what we're really doing, they'll hang us.
My only point of contention there is, what kind of an idiot would bring AOC in on a fucking conspiracy? But or is the second greatest con that she's actually a fucking genius? But I mean, it's like having your retarded brother be part of the fucking team. Like, come on, man. Like, Pelosi, I get it.
Well, I mean, it's either that or Jasmine Crock. So,
take
your pick.
Okay. I guess when the bench isn't that deep, you got the Donner Rumsfeld. Like, you go to war with the army, you've got like, fuck. Okay, all right, this is what we've got.
I got nothing for that. That's what I call a timely input, man.
So if anybody follows John Solomon and Just the News, I personally think that he's got more of the insider connections of what's going on in D.C. And I caught an interview with him saying that there, by the end of this year, next couple of weeks, there could be almost 100 grand juries being convened all over the place. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But I do know that there's a couple from what's been coming out down in the Southern District of Florida about the 2020. And then actually, I think it might have been a True Social. Trump said he's got everything. He's got incontrovertible evidence of everything. So I was kind of thinking last night he was going to just drop the freaking bomb on the whole thing, which obviously didn't happen because it was another me kind of freaking speech
rally. Well, I hate to say it, but that's what we want to hear at the end of the year, right?
Yeah.
Wait, American people don't want to hear 5 days before Christmas, yep, we're going to war. Buckle up.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I absolutely agree with that. But let's not, I actually think the biggest thing that Trump said last had nothing to do with, you know, him and his me bullshit. It's the fact that he did, in a way, buy the guys with the swords, too. You know, that 1776 check is kind of a fucking joke if you're an adult, but to the E3s and E4s in the barracks and that kind of shit, to the boys, the guys that actually, you know, carry the water in the fucking war, that's a pretty big deal. And this is, as far as I know, that's completely without precedent in United States history, too.
It is. It is. Yeah, that's good stuff. Pete, you haven't said anything. Say some shit.
I was taken in by the conversation that Tucker Carlson had with Judge Knapp yesterday morning, I think it was.
And that's who it was. Exchange. Yeah, Napolitano. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm okay with both of those guys, but they definitely missed the call. And since I was looking at that side of the field, I missed the call too. I share what others have said about it's better than it could have been. You know, Donald pounding his chest and doing King Ape thing is a lot better. You know, as Clay pointed out, and others, you know, this is not the time for that. If there's the time for the kind of stuff that was being talked about, that can start in January. I'm also interested in what that claim of 100 grand juries. I just say this as an old local and state prosecutor. The problem with federal prosecutors is they really don't like to do their job. And so you've got to get people. And I'm not a Bondi fan. I know that world, at least at the state and local sense. And it's real easy for people to slide out. I think, you know, I'll believe it when I see, and this sounds crazy, but that's not the first time today, even for me. You know, when I see the gallows being built, as was done after the Lincoln assassination, then I'll think people are serious. But it's such an incestuous swamp there, and that phrase has been used far too much, but I'll believe it when I see it, because it's in the actual operation of federal criminal law.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
You basically better not break wind, because there's probably both an EPA statute and an abuse of children and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, compared to what I had when I was doing trial cases and then even investigative stuff with wiretaps, you know, we actually had to walk the line, and the feds weren't that way. And they haven't gotten any better in the ensuing 30 years. So I think it's like a lot of things with we're all doing. It's good to keep an eye on what's going over the horizon and what's there. But what's going to get us, and I think I learned this idea originally from Clay, but what's going to get you is within, you know, let's say 5 miles of where you are right now. And if we're not thinking and imploring others to think that way, and I'm not talking crazy stuff, I'm talking about what happens if the fire engines don't roll because there's no X, and what happens when there's no overhead lights or anything else, all that stuff.
Well, exactly.
That kind of, go ahead.
Exactly to that point. I mean, they're learning that lesson all over again. We're watching all this political bullshit. Western Washington is getting just decimated right now. It's almost like the you know, Asheville collapse all over again. There's 500,000 people more without power. All this windstorm. You know, that's the things that matter to people right now. And ultimately, when things get real, that's what matters to us too.
It's not just Washington State. It's Washington, Idaho, and Montana.
It's South Dakota, Colorado, too.
Yeah, my kids are up there, and my oldest works for one of the power companies up there, and I can tell you that the equipment that's underwater, I can tell you they will not replace for several years, because all of it comes out of China, and that's just one piece, right? So the other piece is they've had dikes break. They've had levees break, and they're Washington. When I was a kid, you know, when I was a boy, used to plan on at least one flood a year, right? The Snohomish Valley, the Skykomish River, whatever, just take your pick, right? this is unprecedented because they got 10 inches of rain literally in one day, and then 4 days later they got another 10 inches of rain, which is unprecedented. And I don't know if you're looking at the weather patterns today, but most of the rainfall, there's no southern trough, there's no jet stream. Literally right across the equator is a bunch of rain, and I've never seen anything like it in the weather radar in my lifetime. So we are seeing weird weather, and I don't want to go into the theories around all that, but the aspect that's going to hit home in the Pacific Northwest, it's not the floodwaters. It's the fact you're going to see insurance companies go bankrupt now. You're going to see power companies that can't replace the equipment for several years, and you're going to see this lag time in people being able to rebuild. Because again, it's not just the insurance companies, it's the state regulators, like in California, right? Nobody can rebuild in Los Angeles because of all the regulations. So you're going to see that too, all at the same time. And it's the middle of winter, just like in North Carolina, right? It's the middle of winter. So I know lots of people that were affected. In fact, one of my good friends, his house is still underwater. It's like 8 feet underwater.
Wow.
So I can't imagine what they're going through. But yeah, so it's going to be, I think we're going to see a lot more out of Washington State. And yeah, I'd love to say it was by design, but their response has been less than that. And you don't hear Trump talking about it at all. There's no federal emergency.
Well, that's exactly. It's exactly the same as North Carolina. People are just ignoring that. I live in the Northwest now, and my mom had to call me and tell me this was going on. And as soon as I start digging for it, it's there. But it is amazing that this is not, every headline in America. And as you said, with the delayed response too, well, I hate to be that guy, but it looks like we mostly don't care about the white rednecks in Western Washington. I mean, they'll probably care about Seattle, but everybody else, nobody gives a shit.
Actually, a lot of Seattle and surrounding area is pretty liberal, so I'm surprised they didn't roll out the red carpet and send up the liberal police.
Well, hopefully that part washes off in the ocean, but everybody else, I care.
Yeah, imagine all those data centers and all those big hubs they put up and down the coast.
Well, here's an interesting thing about where those are in Washington, right? So you've got Microsoft stuff, it's all in Eastern Washington, but you've got stuff all along the Duwamish River. You got Boeing, you've got PACCAR, you've got Northern, what's the Northern Railroad? Northern Pacific Railroad. You got tons of infrastructure right there. And then in Tukwila, which is right around the corner, they evacuated that 2 days ago. There's like 20 data centers down there. If that's underwater, that means there's a lot of different cloud providers that are probably at Expedia. You can start naming names, right, that are probably having issues. So I'm curious to see how widespread it is.
Debt Jubilee, though. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Oh,
that would be Visa, Visa and MasterCard. I wish I had known this last week. I'd have run them up. It's not financial advice. Okay, go on.
Hey, Bruce, you got any thoughts on any of this? Because you've been quiet this whole time.
Well, I was looking at some stuff while you guys were talking, and this popped up. I think it kind of fits into the insurance and the real estate issue. Palantir CEO Alex Karp reportedly paid a record $120 million for his new 3,700-acre ranch outside of Aspen, Colorado. I know exactly where this ranch is, and I actually think that's a low number. I mean, 3,700 acres in that area should probably be on the order of $500 million. I don't know. But anyway, it's just interesting where he's picking the location.
And, did you guys see the article? Who posted it? Her name is, she's on Twitter. I don't know if you guys follow her or not. She's on Twitter, or she's on Substack. Sorry. Somebody sent it to me. That's her name. The Dre dossier. Do you guys know who she is? I'll post it in the chat. I posted it to my Substack. I listened to her talk, and her premise is that this ballroom that they're putting in the White House is really an
interesting. Yes. Yep. I did see that.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that is not only is that plausible, but that makes a hell of a lot of sense, right? because the project, no, it's not Project Oracle. What is Larry Ellison's day two project? Some bullshit. Anyway, Elon said like 2 days after that, where's the money coming from? And now we know it's a public-private partner. They're doing all the shit through public-private partnerships. And the question I have is, why would you build a data center at probably one of the most targeted areas on the planet? I mean, think about it. White House is the most targeted place on the planet. I'll put it a different way. We used to laugh in the ICBM business because we were like, we'll get one or two warheads, but the White House is going to be a warhead sponge. Because they're going to make sure it's gone, right? It's not just going to be a deep hole. Okay. It's going to be a deep hole followed by another deep hole.
Maybe you'd build a data center there if you were going to get data out of Venezuela that you didn't want. That you weren't worried about ICBMs, but you were worried about controlling access to secure data in a place that really in America would be hard to get to. And then it starts making a lot more sense. You look at that data center as low-level threat as opposed to nation-state threat. And it carries a little more credence that way.
Oh, absolutely. You're totally thinking of my wavelength, right?
Yeah.
All the Epstein files, mm-hmm. all the January 6th files,
right.
All the stuff that Lindsey Graham's been doing to little boys, all that shit. Yeah, that's a great place to keep it if you want to coerce them.
So. Yeah, there's a lot more interest in standalone operations where they want to gravitate away from cloud to where, you know, basically their data is siloed.
Because keep going with that, Chris. Keep going with that. I know where you're going.
They recognize the same things we recognize at the micro level. They're looking at it at the macro and seeing that, okay, you know, I want my PC, my phone, my personal data to be secure. And so I try to keep it offline as much as possible, just, you know, right out of the gate. Well, they're doing the same thing with their data, but they're taking it serious now. So that's an indicator all by itself. So if that is in fact what's going on there, which it kind of looks like to me, especially considering the contractors they hired, it's the same contractors that do that stuff for the agency.
Yeah. So. And the other thing it tells me too, which is why I brought it up, because I knew you'd have an opinion on this. The other thing it tells me too is that they want to put part of the control grid, at least the control interfaces.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now, whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It's right there, so they have direct access to it. Because think about it this way. If you got a bunch of underground data centers, and God knows how many they've already built and or they're building, and they're all linked together via underground cable that you can't tap into, what a better way to control it than put it right at the fingertips of the guy in charge. And I mean, it gives you a lot of information. The other thing that I think is interesting about it is, and I'm not taking credit for this one because I wasn't even paying attention to him. I'm like, yeah, he's not building a ballroom. I don't know what he's building. I don't care. But now that I do see it, now I do care because because here's the other part that we haven't talked about is with, and I don't know how much of this stuff's real either, is all this, you know, Israel's in charge stuff and all this, you know, all this propaganda, because I'm seeing a lot of messaging around it. Granted, Israel's not helping themselves with their messaging, but I don't know how much of all of that I believe, but I definitely am interested to see what foreign ties and what foreign influence is involved there and what kind of connectivity it has outbound. Because that's a tell, right? Where does that fucker go? And Having done this at scale, I can tell you that if you're going to build one, you're going to build something that's geographically separated. So where's the other one? Camp David? Is the other one, is it in Florida, Mar-a-Lago? Where's the other one? Because you don't just build one, you replicate data across two geographically separated data centers. So if one gets taken out, you can go immediately fail over to the other one. And given the contractors that are involved, as soon as that, and I won't say the name of it, but as soon as they said one of the contracts, I'm like, they're doing failover somewhere else. So I'm curious to see how many other data centers are tied into this. I don't think it's just one.
So keep in mind, they've gotten pretty good at hiding these data centers in plain sight. They just relabel them. So I'm sure everybody on this panel has seen a data center in their AO that's gone up recently. They're proliferating massively, and AI is a big driver for it. But a lot of them, I got to tread lightly here. A lot of them, they aren't what they appear to be. I'll just say that. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think on the technology side, they're lagging behind. They're not where they thought they were going to be as far as the build out goes, because they're building like 30 data centers here, as well as Taiwan Semiconductor, which is literally right across the highway from me. So they're building gangbusters, and you're right. They can hide it better than anybody. I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting that I missed that. I wasn't paying attention to it, but it makes a hell of a lot of sense now. And it also makes a lot of sense why Larry Ellison was brought in on day two, because it means that the government's funding a lot of that through these public-private partnerships. So there's no FOIA request. So we'll never know what's put in there. If this was a straight government contract, we could FOIA it and see who the contractors were, what equipment was ordered. Well, you can see most of the equipment that was ordered. We can't see any of that. And because it's a private partnership and they're donating, we'll never know what the hell's in there. So, yeah.
I think this is part of the reason for this this memory apocalypse that we're slipping into right now, where we've got Micron and Samsung and all the big players stepping out of the market.
Which I think is really interesting. Micron's local to us too, and we just moved back to Boise. And coming up here like 2 years ago, there's a pretty big construction site rolling into town this time. My God, I mean, it's hard to describe the scale of what there is. Just it looks like a picture from 1920s New York with just fucking cranes and giant ass concrete buildings going up everywhere.
Is that one on the east end of town?
It's probably quadrupled, maybe 10 times the size it used to be. And just construction fucking going everywhere, and they're getting out of the memory game for citizens. You're like, that's pretty weird how this is working out.
Well, think about it this way. So just like in the ammo business, right, a lot of ammo companies were sold off about 3 years ago, and most people don't realize that most of our ammo was made right here in the U.S. but with those that production capabilities sold off to a foreign bidder in this case, then the question becomes, where's the ammo going to come from? And if you look at it from a strategic perspective, if you take away all of the memory for the consumers, then eventually people are going to, their systems are going to age out, and they're going to have to go with your new system, whatever you decide it's going to be. I mean, remember, these people are strategic. They're doing the same thing with the housing market, right? Trump talked about affordable housing, which is all words, because you have private equity buying up homes at a breakneck pace, single family homes, and they're pricing people out of the market. That's all just by design, so that they slowly put you into a kill box. That's how I see this. They're slowly putting people into a kill box so that at some point you're going to have to buy their systems, whatever. If you want to plug in, you got to buy their systems. There won't be any of these, punked phones or any of the rest, the Eric Prince phones or any of the rest. It's going to be whatever phones are on the market that are authorized to work with the digital control grid that they put together. And that's what all the data centers are for, right? It's to build the 15-minute cities. And I think they're trying to do it by 2030. I don't think they're trying to do it by 26 or 27. I think by 2030, they're going to like price everybody out of the market, or at least move them out of the market, so that you have to adopt whatever they have, right? And Elon, the tell was in Elon's interview. I think it was Joe Rogan, where he said, within 5 years, all the content on your phone will be served up by AI, and it will be tailored to exactly what you want. And I can't remember the name of this Netflix place. It's a Netflix, it's like a Netflix meets Universal Studios that just opened up in two places in the U.S. Their terms of service, when you walk in the gate, you buy a ticket, they have unlimited access to your memory and on whatever phone you're using, as well as your data for the entire time you're there. So basically what they're doing is they're profiling you as soon as you walk on the site. They're building a profiler, which will tie into Netflix, your browsing history in Netflix. Yeah. They're building the systems right now. Yeah. They're building the systems right now so that everything you see is curated. So all that makes sense to me. That's why you see the bigger picture of what they're doing at scale. You're like, okay, I get it. Yeah.
So can I, with you guys here, I got a question, Steve and Kay, from what you said that makes me think about if you control the data centers, if you control all the memory storage, basically you control all the information. If you have to use their data storage, their centralized control facility, it becomes where you have no freedom of information by virtue of them controlling the memory. Is that right? Correct understanding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's picture the Apple walled garden. So for you Mac people, everything you do with an Apple product, you're stuck in their system.
Right.
Just picture that on a grand scale where it's not a choice. Like you can make a choice to not be part of the Apple ecosystem, but they're going to roll it out so that it's everywhere. And you know, it's if you go online and you know damn well they're going to roll digital ID into this shit.
It sounds like it's like you're putting everybody back into, you know, ABC, CBS, and NBC, basically, in terms of television. It's like you're pulling everybody back into a controlled environment, basically.
You are, because you think about it this way. So the only way a control freak can feel like they're in control is to exert more control, right? These people only have one card they play, and that's exert more control. So they can't control all of social media, but they can flood it with garbage, right? And if you look at, and Clay, you talked about this week, right? They spent so much money flooding the system with garbage over the last couple of weeks that at some point that becomes unfeasible. So what's your next best thing? Build the supply chain so that you supply all the information and that everybody has control, everybody has to consume, and then you kill off the rest of the supply chain that people have control over, and guess what? You're back to three channels on the TV. That's the whole point, so they can get back to programming. Again, they only have one fucking play, man. It's control. That's it. So, call me crazy. Pete, I know you got a thought on this one, because
thinking about, you know, how much of a joy it's going to be spending the next 5 years. Because I think the 2030 is from what little I've read, that's optimistic, and you know, I think we need to be, I'll put it this way, I need to pray a bit more, because this is beyond what's ever been done to humankind before, and they're bloody serious about it. And I mean, we've got some smart men on this who can respond to this question, which is, how do you stop a machine like that? And I'm not talking about any sort of details or anything, but just at the species level, how do you stop that? Because these guys don't want to stop. They benefit by doing it. It's terrifying.
There's only one way to do it. That's disclosure. People have to see what's really going on, and they have to pull the covers back so that the entire public sees what these people are doing. But more importantly, you have to get there in their own words saying exactly what their intent is, and that will galvanize the public. Yep. You know, part of the thing that they have that we've always been a handicap by is the fact that they have anonymity and they have control of information, right? I don't know if you guys were paying attention this week, but this is a good example. This MIT PhD that was killed. Guy was working on fusion, and he was talking about pole shift. Like he literally did an interview where he talked about pole shift and how, you know, tectonic displacement. Chris, you and I talked about that online a billion times. Next day, he's dead. I mean,
purely coincidental. Yes. Yes. Russian roulette gone wrong with Hillary Clinton as his partner. I don't know. Some crazy shit. No, you're exactly right. You know, it's fucking weird. And I think, honestly, the other way that you fight this or what always happens is we're seeing this. It's always a little bit of an arms race. It's not like our people are completely blind to what's going on and all this other shit. So they're trying to exert this control. All right, it's a race to the top of the pyramid. All right, you can get up here and smash all their shit with a brick because you have the population that's turned to your side. Hey, cool, awesome. If you don't, well, now there's too few of you, and they're going to fucking enslave humanity until, I don't know, the fucking meteors turn the lights off in 1,000 years. I mean, this is part of what we're seeing, though, with this British propaganda coming out right now, though, where they're like, oh, fuck, we got to get an army to fight the Russians, all this crazy shit. They're maneuvering other pieces to try and take their fighting age males off the board, for instance. They really want to send those guys to die against Russian bayonets because they know they've probably only got a few years before even, you know, Cuck Island just starts stringing them up from fucking lampposts.
Yeah.
I think we are too.
This is the race that we're in. And it can be won or lost. All right. They could succeed. They could, I don't know, conscript all the fucking dudes from 20 to 30 or 20 to 40, whatever they want, and throw them in a meat grinder and win, all right, or they could be a revolt. It's always an option, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it's – I've been saying this. This is something that Luongo and I have gone back and forth on is I think it's a game of chicken between the bankers, right? If you watch the moves they're making on the financial side, there is something what the gal from Project Prometheus and what Luongo are saying about the banks and the disconnection from the Fed and disconnection and re-engagement of the Treasury, because I'm watching the moves they're making there and it's pretty significant right now. Do I like the idea of these stable coins and all the other retarded things they're doing? No, but if I look at the bigger picture, it does look like a game of chicken to see who's going to fail first. And it sure looks like that. The Europeans, they know they have to go to war no matter what to wipe out the debt because their debt's crushing. So there's that piece too. I don't think we're going to get to 2028. I think we're going to have, you know, by the time we get to the midterms this next year, I think there's already going to be civil strife. I can guarantee you if they roll up Obama, there will be civil disorder. There absolutely will be.
That will be fucking spicy. that's exciting to even think about right there.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? So the other thing I think is interesting too that I've been paying attention to, because I'm watching all the narratives that are coming out, and you know, it sure seems like, and I can't remember who said this. I don't know if it was Tucker or if it was Chase, what's his name, that was on Sean Ryan, but it sure seems like
Chase Hughes,
they keep accelerating the timeline for some fucking reason. And I see the moves they're making, and I'm like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That's not how that game's played. Right. I see these narratives come out. I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't put that out right now. That's not going to get any traction. And some of it, like you said, is to entice the base. Some of it is just messaging to the base. Some of it is just incitement. Some of it is a loyalty test, like you guys talked about. But I see these other narratives that are coming out, and I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense right now. Like, I don't get the UFO card. I mean, I love making fun of it, but I don't get why they bring it out now. What are they distracting us from?
It's distraction theater.
Absolutely, and it is.
But they've got this huge bucket of this shit that they reach into lately, whether it's the Charlie Kirk event or UFOs or, you know, pick one. And it's designed to keep us away from the stuff that's actually matters. The fact that we've lost our nations, the fact that there is a small oligarchy that is running everything, the fact that the pole shift is a reality based event and it is happening quicker than they thought.
Yeah. You know? That's where I was going. So thanks for bringing that full circle. Do you think that, no, I'm serious. Cause I was going there and got tangential. Do you think that is accelerating? I mean,
that's what the data
shows.
There's
no question it's accelerating.
I mean, look at the Aurora Borealis we've seen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absurd.
The last year and a half, I've seen Aurora Borealis, like the only place I've ever seen in Colorado. I've seen auroras like I've only seen in places like Greenland and Norway before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. With smaller cosmic events that make it happen, which is also
absolutely
insane.
Exactly.
And even go to the man, this was the one that blew my mind when and it's been a couple of years since I learned this, but when I saw that they had to go rewrite the declination for magnetic to true north in 5 years instead of 10 back in 2017, they had to like do an emergency, like we had to figure out what the fuck the declination is again because all of our maps are screwed up. I was like, oh, hold on. You look at the chart that traces it back to as long as we're able to measure this, this is like, I don't know, 1860 or so. You can physically see the acceleration of the pole shift. And when you start looking at the other side of the of where that pole shift goes, you're like, oh, this is a lot. This is not some event that takes 100,000 years. This is something that it reaches a tip point and it snaps. And it's, even as a, you know, a dumbass that doesn't really understand physics, you look at it like, oh, fuck, that's exactly what happens. Yeah, so I mean, I do believe firmly they're getting ready for that, and it's coming fast.
Well, Ben Davidson, within the last year, he had a video that he put up that describes exactly what you're saying, Clay, where he shows the speed of the magnetic pole shifting and how you can see it. It's accelerating exponentially. And I just want, I took basically what he was describing and just made a simple mathematical model based off of what I was seeing. And it, basically, it was predicting the magnetic pole was going to move to the equator in 3 years, jeez, based on the rate of change that he was showing already occurring.
It was, this was a year or two ago, right? Because I remember that video. It was like a year or two ago.
So right.
Perhaps that's your answer, Steve.
I hope not, because that's an extinction level event, and I'm in the zone according to the map. Let me just show you the map here, because, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, I don't know exactly how the magnetic pole correlates to the physical pole. But you got to believe if the magnetic pole is moving that fast in 3 to 5 years, that that's going to impact the physical pole.
Yeah, you see the part right there in Arizona, right? Yeah. You see that part? That says I'm fucked if this happens.
No,
so I can wait another couple of days for this to happen. Yeah, so I got to order it. I got to order cigars on the way. Just saying.
Either going to go from no water to all water.
Yeah.
It starts making these strategic moves start making so much sense when you look at it in that lens too. Like, why are we so invested in Northwest Passage? Why are we like seriously talking about annexing Greenland, which is not bullshit? They're talking about doing it. Why would we be going to South America? Oh, the other place in this hemisphere that's protected from this the water base when this magnetic event happens. That's a lot of moves that would have been preposterous 10 years ago. Now, especially when you see it in this light, they start making a whole lot of sense. They're planning for the after.
Okay, oh, absolutely, they are. Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
I want to throw this question in then. So let's presume the elites know this is coming down the pipe. You know, it will hit a point where of no return, and the acceleration, you know, will be completely complete. If they know all this stuff is coming, then why are they pushing for all this electronic data center, all this stuff? None of it's going to survive. What's the point?
I have an answer for that.
Okay.
Me too.
So I actually believe that they think it will. I think they believe they have the technology to make it so they're survivable. That's the only reason you would invest in this shit. And that goes back to the arrogance that typically comes with these high-level oligarchs and this kind of bullshit. I think that they think that it will survive. It's as simple as that.
Or a portion of it will, right?
Yeah, fair. Counts. You know, nutrition, that counts.
Right. And the other side of it, too, is when you think about it, don't look at it from the aspect of the build-out. Think about it from the aspect of hiding funds and hiding activities through public activities. Because, and I'll use Strategic Triad as a perfect example. When they were building out the Titan sites, and Titan 1, Titan 2 was one of the biggest missiles we've ever built. When they were building the Titan sites, that was a closely guarded secret. They weren't, public knew we were building out, but they didn't know where we were building. The Russians, of course, knew we were building. But just like all the experiments we were doing at the labs, they used money that was being funneled into the services to go back into the Atomic Energy Commission to do more warhead testing and testing over there. They funneled a lot of money into that. So everybody thought it was going into energy, but really it was going into nukes. And if I was Trump, and Catherine Austin Fitz is all over this too, if I was Trump, and I knew that there was an event coming that was survivable. And again, Chris, I'm going to let you chime in on this because this tectonic displacement, that's where this comes in. You look where they're building in solid bedrock in a lot of these places. I mean, they're not building in soft dirt or swamps. They're building into rock. So they number one, don't think that rock's going to move. Personally, I don't want to be in a deep fucking hole when the earth moves above me, because, you know, digging myself a couple of miles out with a spoon through rock is not going to be fun. But number two, if I listen to this PhD from MIT, he said that, you know, there's strong evidence that pole shift is in conjunction with an ice age. So let's just say all things being equal and the warming currents, they cease, and most of the upper and or the northern and southern hemispheres are iced over. That means the equator. So
mean the equator because of the tectonic shift. It doesn't mean the equator. It means the equator actually rolls 90 degrees, which means that effectively, like, Mexico is now splitting on its axis the other way, and actually the earth rotates the other direction as well. So everything that's in the northern hemisphere right now, this basically comes down to mass too, where I think the MIT guy covered this same thing. The theory is that the crust is actually held to the mantle by a magnetic field. When that unlocks, it loosens, the mass goes to the center of the earth. So Greenland now becomes the equator and it spins this way. That's partially why you go to an ice age. You have all this, you know, frozen bullshit that now comes down to where the heat is, and it takes a little while for the polar streams to reset. But that's effectively what the theory is.
True.
I'm just laughing the way you say all that bullshit, Moses.
It's a scientific term.
Oh, it just cracks me up.
Well, I, you know, geologically, we know, you know, Iceland, you know, doing core samples, drilling down, they pulled up, you know, like tropical exotic plants below the ice. So we know that this has happened in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing in Antarctica.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, there's kind of two leading theories on crustal displacement, and realize we're playing a statistical, you know, percentage game with crustal displacement even happening, but there is a lot of data supporting it. But one theory is you'll end up with Antarctica basically equatorial, and I think that works out to Greenland being pretty close to also being equatorial, so that becomes your new warm spot, but. You know, how long does it sit in that position before things even out again? You know, who knows? We start really getting off in the weeds and it turns into a guessing game. But I would say this, the top 1%ers, the people that arguably are in the know, they're all bunkering up. They're all spending massive, massive amounts of their wealth to dig and place these bunkers. You don't do that over the threat of nuclear war. I don't buy that at all. I just don't buy.
Everybody does. No one does.
I'm 100%. That's why I mentioned. That's why I mentioned the Alex Karp buying the ranch in near Aspen, 3,700 acres at 7,700 feet.
Oh, you know he's built a deep fucking hole. You know it's probably already being built. They probably broke ground the day he closed.
I mean, I know it's I've been there. I've been on that ranch. I know exactly where it used to be, where it is. And it used to be a Catholic priest monastery. I've been to church services right where this is. And it's got a ring of mountains around it. Not high mountains, mind you, but high enough that you could dig a hole in one of them.
Well, you're at 7,700 feet. Yeah, I think he's money. Right. So I think there's a lot of credence to all of it. Right. And it may all. When I start to look at where they're building data centers, it makes a lot of sense because they're building tons here. So they obviously think that some of this is going to survive.
The other aspect of that too, along the lines of the data centers and all this infrastructure they're laying in, they're going to hedge their bets because, again, this is a percentage game. You know, Ben Davidson thinks 70% chance of crustal displacement. And I agree with that. I think it's probably a ballpark good figure. So it's not a guarantee. They're going to hedge their bets. They're going to continue to build out their 15-minute city, you know, dystopic nightmare world that, you know, us serfs just have to dwell in abject misery, which, you know, it's not going to work out that way, but.
Well, no, because I think the other thing that Ben Davidson talks about, which, you know, there's only so much of Mr. Right that I can handle one sitting. But I'll just say this, you know, I like the guy. Don't get me wrong. I know him. He's a nice guy, but, you know, he's not always right about everything. The piece that we're not considering any of this is EMP from the sun, right? You know, a good blast from the sun, it fries a lot of these. We have another Carrington event, and all this data centers and all this technology is pretty much null and void, or at least enough of it to where they're not going to be able to function. So I agree with the numbers game, right? You always build more, you double your capacity if you can, so that if, you know, a third of it's taken out, you can still operate. I think that's the premise they're working with. But I want to go back to something for a second, because this is what I find interesting. During the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, we were digging some deep fucking holes for FEMA. And I mean deep fucking holes. What happened to all of those? Did they decommission all those? I don't think so. If anything, they should be modernizing. And some of this would be to modernize and to build out those underground cities. Because some of those are cities. I've been in some, like, God damn, this is big. So just saying.
Question for the technical-minded. It seems to me just everything I've listened to from Ben Davidson and Ethical Skeptic and everyone else is the key is understanding where is the rotational fulcrum, where is the center of rotation when the Earth tilts. And they've discussed this somewhat, and I've never fully completely grasped or come to terms with it technically. And I'm curious if any of you, Chris, or anyone has gotten a clue to that, because to me, it seems like the secret is if you can be where the center of rotation is, you're not going to really experience much in a pole shift. The worst place to be is going to be the place that moves the furthest.
I think I can field that one, and Chris backed me up on this. The problem is not the Earth shift. The problem is that the Earth stops all the shit that's like actually tied in it. The water doesn't. So right. You think about you know, globe spinning or it, you know, whatever the fuck our speed is, miles per hour.
Totally get that. Yeah.
It has to gradually slow down some, or else it'd just be over. But the water keeps going. So whichever way the Earth is spinning right now, when it stops rotation, water keeps. So this time, maybe last time, North America got hosed the worst, or the East Coast got hosed the worst. This time it's Europe. Europe takes the brunt, all right, and we catch the backsplash as things start to spin the other direction. While that's happening, while the ball is turning this way, that's the part that I think is much more unpredictable, because that should, according to the models I've seen at least, and again, this is all like, who fucking knows? We've never actually seen it happen. We're guessing. All right, but if this happens first, it has to stop, and then as it starts to respin, that's where the mass, like a top, you know, the fattest part of the top is the part that will always become the center of rotation. As it turns, Antarctica and all the mass from Greenland is happening, and the oceans are kind of filling back in as it starts to spin back up. So it's not really a question of – it's a question of the water. So it's not really a question. It's so you have to be at high elevation, and hopefully you're on the washback side instead of the splash over side. In the United States, we look at that as, do the mountains on the West Coast and then the Rockies, is that enough to break the bad part that we get from the West Coast?
So what I guess one of the other thing is, when was the last time this happened? I'm forget. Was it like 100,000 years ago or something like
100,000?
No, 12,000. I thought, yeah, they were saying 12,000 years ago, but I think it's more like four. I don't think it's
okay.
The Great Flood, basically.
Yeah, theory is either a great flood 6,000 years ago. There's also a theory that these happen on half cycles too. You get a really bad one at 12, and you get a sort of bad one at 6.
Okay. In that case, people would say the middle cycle.
Yeah, 6,000 year cycle. Yep.
Okay, so I basically our land mass hasn't changed enough to, you know, alter the flow of the water as it's sloshing around. is kind of what I was
getting. Well, yeah, there's what's that guy's name on Twitter that's been modeling all this.
Yeah, he's got some interesting models.
Juno, is that what his name is?
Yeah, Juno.
Mm-hmm. Well, post that in the chat if you would, because I want to check that out. I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, let me look for it. But you know, part of the reason why nobody really knows what it looks like is because everybody fucking died during the last one.
Almost everybody.
Right.
Well, while he's looking that up, to the theory of Noah's flood, there's also the theory of why Noah and his family would have survived. They were on the backsplash last time, so they were catching the slow rise of water. The other interesting thing about this, and I actually cover this quite a bit in my book, Barbarian Spirit, because I'm going to ask these questions in the spirit realm too. Every culture on Earth has some version of the flood story, all right? Which exactly. A lot of times,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to say that.
Christians have used that to say, oh, well, it did happen this one time, and then, you know, the memory proliferated. I don't think that's actually right. I think every culture has seen it happen. So many of those stories are so close to, even all the way back to the tablets of Gilgamesh for the Babylonian, basically, mythological doctrine, which we know is older than the Bible and older than the Hebrew Bible and stuff by at least 6,000 years. They have an almost exactly the same story as Noah, except it's one of their kings, and you know, he gets a bunch of grain and animals on a fucking raft, and he survives.
So basically, you're saying if you're a good surfer, then you can ride it out?
That's a bold strategy, but I like where your head is.
There it is.
Like your enthusiasm.
Right, exactly right.
What gets me is when you look at the globe and you look at the Pacific, and literally almost looks like, if you look at the right view of the Pacific Ocean, it almost looks like the entire globe, half the globe is water. And it makes me think that, is it really even possible to be high enough? I don't know. I mean, if we talk about the type of giant dynamics we're talking about, I don't know if there's any place safe enough above ground. I mean, I think you'd almost have to be underground at high altitude, even. I don't know.
So the big question is, and there's no answer, of course, is how fast does this occur? Because
exactly,
it's fluid dynamics. If we're moving a couple feet an hour, no big deal. If we're moving a couple miles an hour, bigger deal. If we're moving hundreds of miles an hour, yeah, everybody's going to get wet. And then people aren't even considering the atmospherics. They're thinking about the water, but you know what the wind's going to be like? Holy shit.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's exactly. I mean, Chris is exactly right. This is where we run into some of this, like, you know, theory and modeling only goes so far. We can assume that human beings have survived this multiple times in the past because we're all still sitting here. But how exactly, nobody fucking knows.
Yeah, well, we survived this go around.
All I got to say is, I don't want to be underground when this shit goes off, because I don't want to be underground for 150 or 200 years. Well, first of all, I won't live that long because everything fucking hurts right now. And then secondly, the older I get, the more bitter I get. So if I'm underground for longer than like 2 weeks, I'm going to be pissed off anyway. So I'd rather just go on the surface. Fuck it. Just be blown away by the wind like a tornado. I'm
just
good.
Keep your water wings handy.
That's right. There you go. Yes. That's my plan. Smoke them if you got them.
So, all right. I mean, I'll throw out another question. So if we do have some sort of shift of the earth and the crust, will it open up any holes in the sea, at the seabed, and would that cause water to drain? I mean, there's so many things that could possibly happen, you know, that it is almost hard to even imagine or predict anything.
Yeah, I mean, what is it, last year they discovered subterranean oceans holding more volume than all the surface oceans combined. That's
damn,
pretty insane.
No, I didn't catch that.
I hadn't heard cool. This.
What?
Yeah, pretty interesting. Which also aligns with what's talked about in Genesis. The water is underneath, the water is below.
But it's short, water. You're fucked.
Well, and here's the thing, and this is kind of where my head's at, is, you know, best you can do and stuff like that is get to a good intermountain area, do your normal prepping stuff, and, you know, I hate to say it, but build tribe. Because we're, you know, I don't see national solutions at this point. I don't see
God,
Europe,
no, the
I
same
don't
people.
Europe being saved. I'm not black pilling. I'm just, you know.
No, you're right, man.
Everybody here knows this.
Oh yeah.
You know, we have got to focus our efforts on things that we can actually achieve, and you know, we can't do anything about crustal shift.
Right. But, I mean, it's like a I mean, exactly. You know, plan for the best plan for the worst and hope for the best and hope it works out. And you're talking about such a level of event that, yeah, there's absolutely no guarantees. Is it worth thinking about hedging your bets and moving north or living in the, well, that's actually general good prepper strategy anyway. So, you know, nothing wrong with it. Harder to fly drones at 7,000 feet than it is at, you know, 2 feet. So,
I feel like the way I've taken it, kind of what you're saying, Chris, is it's kind of like what Jesus says in Matthew 24, I think, somewhat, where it's like basically all the material is going to be gone. And we don't know the time frame of this for sure. You know, Ben Davidson talks about the 2040s or whatever. But I feel like you got to have like one foot in the modern world and 1 foot planning for something like this. And all you can do is, you know, because you don't know when the timing is, you got to be prepared to live in the modern world. But because we suspect with pretty good accuracy, I think, that something like this cataclysm is coming, we've got to be prepared and be preparing our kids, especially our kids, because they're going to be the ones that have the chance to really survive. I think, at least in my case, a lot of us are too old to really make it very far through a cataclysm 20 years out, but that's kind of my interpretation.
Hey, Jens.
It's going to be a Wendigo.
Hey, gents, I hate to cut this short, but I need to bail. I got a family emergency. I got to go deal with.
Okay. All right.
Michael, can you shut the live stream off?
Maybe.
You should have a button.
If you send me the login, I can do it.
Hang on, I'll tell you in 1 second here. I don't want to kill this midstream. I may have to.
Good discussion if we don't get to talk anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, gents. Absolutely. And
Pete's got like tons of thoughts and info on the CME.
I keep going until I decide we can't. I'm just checking the
Well, I think the path forward for pretty much everyone is going to be, you've got to get to where you're spiritually comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, you go from there, because you're going to have that, you know, paralysis through paranoia if you don't at least have that on your side.
This is also, I think, is part of the spiritual awakening that we've been seeing over the last 3-4 years too. Part of this has to be that, you have faith and fucking get right with your spiritual bullshit. You'll find the answer. All right. You start looking at the Bible again through this like crustal displacement theory, like a lot of shit starts making a lot more sense.
100%.
Yeah.
Book of Enoch.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking some spice.
There we go. Yep. We're all still good.
Yeah. Who's got long shot? You got the login going? Looks like we're still rolling. Can anybody hear anybody?
I can hear you.
I think we're still going. I think Steve just bailed out. We can keep talking.
Yeah. I've got the counter in the upper left hand still reading. And
I got no audio.
Like everybody's still going.
Okay. I got you.
A question. As we,
okay, I had you 5x5.
We're good. Am I coming over?
Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, a question I have, both for myself and just in general, is how do you go from, and I'll use myself as the guinea pig, I kind of know around the edges of the mythological stuff. How do we?
Yeah, we're still alive.
You still alive?
Yeah.
Can anybody else hear us in the audience?
I don't know. I think we're
still alive. I hear Pete. Okay. Just fine.
Audience is saying audio is still good.
Yeah, so let me just repeat that.
I see you, Pete. I see your lips moving, but hear nothing.
Okay, that's strange.
I hear Pete just fine. Let's keep moving.
Yeah, and I just want to put out a general question for my own edification as well. As,
the audience is still saying they can hear.
Okay.
No, for whatever reason, I have no audio.
Yeah.
Here's the question, and it probably can be put up in the chat.
I'm gonna refresh. Stand by.
We'll keep going. Pete, you're still live. Why don't you keep talking?
Yeah. if we can get it in the chat. Because I've read that kind of thing. And it also ties back with, you know, being raised in church and all that. And, you know, the there being more meaning than just spiritual growth in what we're talking about. Because the biggest problem that I have, just as a moral question, is there are a whole bunch of people that are good people. Dumb evil, or even little stupid evil. But the kind of things that we're going to be seeing in the next decade, be they government-oriented or they are a function of nature, you know, the CMEs and all that kind of, you know, solar stuff. And apparently, more than I knew, based on what you guys have just said, there are a lot more horses on this plate shift and all of that kind of planetary level thing. How do we go from where we are, we being people with any sort of orientation to this, to a whole bunch of people who really don't need to die in, for ignorance? Because this is kind of a niche thing, and just think about how do we get that information to people without, you know, scaring them off the table.
Yeah, no, I mean, you bring up a good point there, and so I would caveat it with this. One goes back to the book, The Path is Narrow, yes, and not many will find it. And it's kind of a belief structure thing. I honestly believe that this will become more apparent before it actually happens. I mean, I don't think we're going to, like, wake up tomorrow morning and this happens.
Right.
I think this becomes a question of faith, though, and I do feel like we've had a huge growth in faith over the last 3 years. I was an atheist 3 years ago myself. As that awakening, and it, like, random-ass dudes out of the woodwork have shown up to me, like, you know, I just woke up one day and I felt like the presence of God, you know, all this stuff. And it's across a lot of beliefs and structures as well. I think that there will be something more akin to a mass awakening. Now, I don't think like 8 billion people are surviving this. I don't think that's fucking happening.
Right.
But I do think this is what the Bible and a lot of other traditions talk about, is the, you know, the end of days and the tests and who's moral and who will do the shit, like, you know, outside of Sodom and Gomorrah, who will abandon all their shit and leave. Who will not look back? All that stuff. Those are all examples for a reason. And so I think this will become more clear over time. We do have a duty to spread the word, but I don't think if you know, this live stream gets cut off and we don't say this, people won't know.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, though.
Thanks, Clay. That's what I was thinking about. It's just, you know, improving fractionally
the amount
of this stuff going on. Because if I hadn't seen, I was actually following the Brown University stupidity, and now that it's tying to the guy who's just talking about the destruction of the planet as it's known,
Wow,
that's an interesting
homicide. Right. No, it is right. Yeah. No. And there's actually a great book from a different. I'm trying to remember the fucking name of it. If I can't think of it right now, I'll look it up and send it to you personally.
That'd be great.
But it's a guy that went back and like retranslated or looked at all the Vedic sagas. So he's an Indian dude. He basically like shit canned Hinduism, started looking at all the Vedic sagas and their talk about like the Kali Yuga and the ages of man. Well, then he did an interesting thing. He started overlaying that with comets that we know happen on, you know, 100,000 year. And the math, basically, without getting, you know, deep in the fucking weeds and shit, the math that he comes up with is very interesting in that regard. Because it really kind of ties us to the Vedic version of, you know, the end of the age, Kali Yuga. Bible's been saying this for a long time. Interestingly, it's both Islam and there's a small tribe in South America that both have the same belief. And this one's really fucking freaky. That at the end of the days, the sun rises from the opposite direction. It sounds preposterous, right? Well, the sun doesn't have to rise from the other direction if the planet fucking starts spinning the other way.
Yep.
There's all this shit that starts making all this kind of sense. And I believe almost every major faith group thinks that we are at that point. Now we're close to it. We're at least seeing the signs of it.
Yep. I think we still have, I mean, obviously you and I are here. Bruce, are you on? I see.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a login so I could let Chris and Mike back in, but I don't have the StreamYard code. It's on my computer, which is home in Colorado, and I'm in New Zealand, so I can't.
Well, that's extremely unhelpful. That's extremely unhelpful.
Yeah. But I had some thoughts about what you were saying, Pete. I just think I've talked about this before in the podcast, but in the past 5-6 years, you know, we've been seeing a lot more stuff when flying at night. And oh, it started with seeing a little bit of stuff. And it, like, you'd see one thing that would kind of move weird or turn lights on and off or whatever. Like, first it started with, I saw a star that got brighter and then it got dimmer and it, nothing else changed. And I'm like, what the fuck? And
yeah.
Then we started seeing them, like a couple of them. And then I've seen as many as 5 or 6. And Chip, AirCav guy in our chat, he's seen them also. We've seen like 5 or 6 at a time moving around. And they're moving in ways that are not explained by what I know is feasible in terms of aircraft and orbital mechanics. So, but anyway, the reason I bring it up is because I think it ties into the spirituality discussion and it ties into the pole shift discussion. And now the question is, what we've been seeing is it could just be advanced space tech that we have in Space Force. It could also be, you know, some type of aliens or whatever. We don't know. But the fact that it's tying into all of us learning about the pole shift situation and everything. And if you look at the Book of Revelation, how it ties in there, and you look at the Book of Enoch and other things, I see kind of a nexus or a locus of information occurring where it's like, well, if for sake of simplicity, I'm just going to use God, but let's say God is a super intelligent being in space somewhere and his angels are watching Earth and he knows that Earth is going to go through this cataclysm every 6 to 12,000 years. And it does say in the Bible that God is the Father and that we were created in his image. Okay. So if you're a father who created your progeny down on Earth and you know they're going to go through this massive cataclysm, any father, all of us, our fathers, are going to try to save our kids any way we can, at least save as many as we can, right?
Right.
Maybe you can't save everybody. So wouldn't it make sense that as you know that Earth is approaching some kind of cataclysm, that you'd send your watchers down to be watching, to be ready to try to save as many people as they can, because you know that it's coming soon, but you can't control exactly when it happens, possibly. And so I know this is raising all kinds of spiritual, moral questions of, well, how powerful is God or whatever, but if the thing that gets me is if you look at the Book of Enoch and the Bible, and I'm by no means an expert of any kind of biblical knowledge. And you look at all the other mythological stories, you know, the Norse mythology, Greek mythology, all of them have, and like you pointed out earlier, Clay, all of them have these discussions of previous cataclysms and floods and everything. So the thing that's occurred to me recently is I used to think when I was younger, like, oh, the people that wrote this, they were just bamboozled by magic or whatever. They just didn't understand what they saw. And what occurred to me was the more I see myself of things moving around in the sky that seem odd and everything is I'm like, no, they weren't idiots. They were intelligent people, every bit as intelligent as us. And they were trying to record what they saw as best they could and make sense of it. And, but they weren't simplistic people. They weren't like morons. They were super intelligent people. And because of that, it makes me say what they wrote in the Bible or Norse mythology, pick your own, whatever religion you pick. They were trying to record it as accurately as they could. And to me, that means that there's a lot more credence to everything that was recorded in this mythological past, and that we shouldn't laugh at it. We shouldn't take it unseriously. We should take it seriously. Like, these were intelligent people recording events that happened before, and we should pay attention is the biggest thing I get. And I do think spirituality matters because like this occurred to me. I know this is way out there, but if you had the great flood the last time and you told Noah to make a big boat and save as many people as you could, and you're like, okay, we know this is going to happen again. How can we save more people? How do we figure out who to save? Well, let's send our emissary, Jesus, let's send our son down there and have him spread the word to try to save as many people. And we're going to give this message to people 2,000 years before the next cataclysm so that humanity has time to spread this message and idea through humanity and learn so that when it comes time to save people, we've got a chance of saving at least the best people we can because they've had time to absorb the message. I don't know. I know this is all far out. I'm just thinking out loud.
Oh, no, man. Hey, look, man, you want to get into some, this actually goes exactly what you're talking about. Then you can start getting into some absolutely crazy. And also, I believe firmly that there is like a lot of hidden knowledge in everybody's myths. Any one of you, I don't give a fuck who's. There's a lot of things that are hidden. It's either because the priest wanted to hide it so that, you know, common man didn't have it. Or it's the language changes have changed so much that we don't really understand it. Sometimes this doesn't happen all that. I've, you know, 6-8 months from now, I'll be reading a myth and I'll be like, oh fuck, I know what they're talking about now. It's not a fucking spear or whatever bullshit. It's something plasma or it's electric. Things start to make a lot more sense. But to where you're going with this, it does bring up like, I mean, crazy out there fucking questions that we have really no way of answering. One of the theories is that, for instance, like a biblical rapture is real, but those people don't go to the spirit world, all right? They get basically phased into the moon, which is hollow because it rings like a bell for the duration of this, all this fucking crazy shit. And then they repopulate for the next age. There's all kinds of stuff out there that, and we have no way of knowing which one is true, but it starts to make a lot of sense. With that said, too, the fact that these like galactic scale storms happen and flip all the poles on all the planets, then it flips ours, that doesn't tell me that there is no God. That just tells me he made a way more fucking complex system than I thought was possible. My childlike brain,
that,
when I read that stuff, like,
that
my,
guy oh, he's, do it.
Exactly. No, he snapped his fingers and was like, no, he made a complex system. So this is a fucking on autopilot. All right. That's actually way scarier. You know what I mean? But, to the question, I don't think he just abandons us either. That's honestly one of the reasons I don't worry about this shit too much. When it's going to happen, I think we'll know. And I think there'll be a way out if you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, guys, I am late for dinner, so I'm going to jump off.
Okay.
Great to see you. Great to be a part of this. I'm grateful to everybody who's here, and I look forward to going ahead.
Right. I think we should do a reattack on this subject because I know that, yes, Kay wants to talk some more. He's in the background and I can't figure out how to log in. I don't have my login here.
Yeah, so it would be a good place to pick up if we, you know, take what's in the chat, read it, and then, you know, kind of jump off where we started in this part of the day.
What I would tell everybody before we end it here is to say, if you're not familiar with PoleShift, go listen to Ben Davidson's, some of his key videos, his disaster playlist, and he calls it the homework, which is basically his disaster playlist. If you listen to some of the key videos there, you'll get a basic understanding. And I think all of us want to talk about this some more. It's obviously going to become a bigger and bigger issue probably as time goes on. And so that's what I would urge everybody in the audience to do so we can have even a better conversation.
Yeah.
But does anybody go ahead?
I'm absolutely down with that, with the caveat that Ben thought it was right. I love Ben. I've watched pretty much all of his stuff. He doesn't have 100% solution either. So, you know, always the grain of salt, but I think it's a great starting point.
Yes.
He gets a lot of shit right.
Yes, I agree 100%. I mean, we should get him back on, actually.
That'd be great. I'd be down.
But, all right. Well, I think when we sign out, it's going to end the live stream. So,
okay.
Thanks again, everybody. And it's great talking. Thanks for joining us, Clay.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. Pete, thanks again, brother.
Thanks, all. Be good. All right.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
See you guys.
Later.
Bye. Okay, guys, I figured out how to log in. I'm going to turn it off. Thanks, everybody, for watching, and have a Merry Christmas.